Everybody, and welcome to our shiur. the topic of today's shiur, the parashas Lech Lecha, is we have in the parasha yesterday, Avraham Avinu went with great mesiras nefesh, with great self-sacrifice, to rescue Lot who had been taken captive in the war that took place between the four and the five kings, the world war of that time. And Avraham Avinu eventually succeeded in rescuing him. So I thought it might be worthwhile to just review briefly some halachos that have to do with saving a person on Shabbos and what the parameters are. Avraham and Lot was not on Shabbos, but I thought that, as it pertains to Shabbos, would be relevant to us. So I'd like to just simply go through, a number of the halachos. I think some of them are well known to us, and perhaps others not as much. The basic source of these halachas is found in the Gemara in Maseches Yuma. Maseches Yuma deals with the laws of Yom Kippur, and in the last section, the last parak of the Masechta, actually is the one that has all the halachas of Yom Kippur. The first part, up until there, deals with the avoda of Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, and the various things that needed the avoda and the Beis Hamikdash. But the last parak called Yom HaKippurim deals with the laws of Yom Kippur, and as such, it deals with the question of a person fasting on Yom Kippur and what happens if their life might be endangered by doing so. So once this comes up, the Gemara takes the opportunity to discuss how it works on Shabbos as well. So before we get to the page that we have printed, the Mishnah prior to that on Daf Pei Gimel in Maseches Yuma says that Misha Nofalov Mapolas, that if a pile of debris has fallen on a person, so then the halacha is Safek Husham, Safek Enosham. Now, you don't know exactly what happened. Let's say there was some sort of collapse, a building collapse, and on Shabbos, and you don't know whether you suspect that there might be a Jewish person in there. But you don't know for sure that the person is there, number one. And number two, Suffolk Chai, Suffolk Mace, you don't know whether, even if the person is there, you don't know if the person is still alive. It could be that from the incident itself, the person has passed away. And Suffolk Kusi, Suffolk Yisrael, you don't know whether it's a Jew or a guy. So the halacha is that the Mishnah says, Mefachin Olavis Hagal. So the halacha is, the Mishnah says that, nevertheless, despite the fact that you have all these doubts, nevertheless, we are Mechal Shabbos to do whatever it takes to remove this debris in order to see if this person is still alive. In other words, ordinarily in the halacha, so we have a rule that Pikuach Nefesh, that the saving of a life is Docha, all the mitzvahs in the Torah except for three. Right? We know this. There's a pasuk which says that when it comes to the mitzvahs, Asher Yasa Osam Ha'adam, the Torah refers to the mitzvahs that a person is supposed to do. V'chai Bohem is the person supposed to live by the mitzvahs. So the Chazal understood that, they interpreted that to mean, what does it mean you should live by the mitzvahs? That means that a person should live and not die, meaning not just that he should lead his life by the mitzvahs, which is one might have thought the pasuk meant, but no, v'chai bohem, you should live by the mitzvahs, which means that if a mitzvah jeopardizes a person's life, so then the person does not have to do it. Now, it's interesting to know, just as an aside, that when it comes to an issa d'oraisa, when it comes to a Torah prohibition, that's what it takes to push it off. In other words, anything short of that is not enough. So therefore, the loss of money, for example, if it's a question of, well, if I don't violate this Torah law, I'm going to lose money. So that's not enough. That's not enough of a justification. Because the only justification that we find for pushing away an Isser in the Torah is when it comes to V'chai Bohem, if it's going to mean somebody's life. So this, of course, is talking about a mitzvah losaseh. To violate one of the negative precepts of the Torah, in order to do so, it has to be a pikuach nefesh and nothing less. has to be because of nefesh and nothing less. It's interesting, let's, for example, in Yom Kippur, so everybody, you know, it comes up a lot of times that a person is ill and they need to eat on Yom Kippur, and people get nervous that it's Yom Kippur. Oh my gosh, how am I going to violate the law of Yom Kippur? It's not just by Yom Kippur, it's by any mitzvah that the Torah says you can't do it. It's a question of eating non-kosher food. A person can't eat non-kosher food unless it's going to jeopardize their life by not eating it. If it'll save their life by eating it, that would be okay. But other than that, a person can't do it. When it comes to mitzvahs derabanan, the standards are much different. So therefore, in other words, there are certain situations where, even though the rabbanon implemented certain prohibitions, but nevertheless, they had certain rules that they worked with, where they were lenient a lot of times. They're lenient in the case of a b'makom choli lo gozer rabbanon, that oftentimes, if it involved a person being sick, even if it was not life-threatening, the Rabbanan would waive the Isser, and so too we find a Makam Tzarwa goes to Rabbanan, various situations. But what you have to understand, and this is very important in general in terms of understanding halacha and how it operates, is that when you're dealing with Isurim the Rabbanan, when you're dealing with something which was prohibited by the rabbis, so we have a basic concept of Heim Amru V'Heim Amru, which literally means they said this and they said that, meaning that they said, if they're the ones that said it's usher, so then they could also say it's mutter in whatever the situation calls for. In other words, they had that authority because it's their law. If you make up the laws, you can make them up how you want, so however you like. So therefore, the Rabbanan, you know, in various situations, we find this. And therefore, it could be that the makom hefsid merubah, that if it's going to be a big loss, or all kinds of situations when you're dealing with an issur derabanan. But people should not make the mistake of saying that that applies also by a Torah prohibition, because that's not true. When it comes to an issur deraisa, when it comes to a Torah law, there's only one thing that pushes it away, and that would be if it involves the loss of life. So it's a totally different standard, and a lot of times there's confusion. A person asks a shaila, and the rabbi says, "Yeah, it's okay," but you have to understand why he said that. And maybe you can't generalize that. You can't say, "Well, if it's okay in that case, it's okay in this case." Maybe not, because it could be the case that he said it was okay is a rabbinic violation, rabbinic yisur. Whereas when it comes to a Torah law, obviously the standard is different. So I just wanted to point that out. Very important distinction to know. Okay, now, yes.
What are the three things?
The three things that the Pikuach Nefesh does not push off, the three cardinal sins of Judaism are Gilui Arayos, Shvichus Damim, and Avodah Zarah, which means immoral relations, sexual relations with a prohibited woman. Okay, that would be Gilui Arayos. Shvichus Damim would be murder, meaning that someone said, if you don't kill that person, I'll kill you. And Avodah Zarah is the worship of Avodah Zarah. Those three things. Now, why aren't those three things included in V'chai Bohem? So the Gemara explains. In other words, one, you could ask that, well, if the Torah says V'chai Bohem, you're supposed to live by the mitzvahs, so why not these also? So that's a good question. That requires an explanation. And in fact, the Gemara cites sources to show that these three are different. But other than that, that's the overriding rule when it comes to Isurim. Now, this discussion is when we're talking about an Isur in the Torah, a prohibition. When you're dealing with a positive mitzvah, the standard is lower. When you're dealing with in other words, let's say a person was shipwrecked on an island, and he didn't have a lulav, but he could get one, but the local natives figured out, you know, that he needs it for this the holiday that the Jews have. So they said, fine, we'll sell you one, but it'll cost $1 million. So the question is, do you have to pay that amount of money? You'll say, well, my wife's not in, let's say I have it. Let's say I have $1 million, but it's not going to jeopardize my life, so am I mechuyev to pay it? So there the standard is different. The standard is that a person does not have to spend more than 20% of their wealth to fulfill a positive mitzvah in the Torah. Okay, so therefore, sometimes a person, in a case like that, if the person was stranded on the island, he would have every right to say, okay, what can you do? This sukkah, I'm not going to have a loaf. Because of the fact that when it comes to not fulfilling a positive mitzvah, it's a totally different standard. But when it comes to a losa, say, when it comes to a negative, and we can understand why that should be. Intuitively, it makes sense, because if God said not to do it, so then you just can't do it. So the only possible way to do it would be if there's some sort of justification. Whereas to not do a positive mitzvah is not the same. It's not as audacious to not fulfill a request as it is to violate a request. Right? If somebody says, please don't do this, and you do it, that's bad. If someone says, I'd like you to please do this, you say, well, it's very hard for me, I can't do it, that's not as bad. Right? So therefore, the standard is different for a mitzvah sase and mitzvah lo sase. Okay? So that's the basic concept of transgressing mitzvahs. Now, when it comes to the cases where a person's life is on the line, so I might have thought that in order for a person to say that, well, it's pikuach nefesh, my life is on the line, and therefore I could violate this isser, so one might think that that's only true if you know for sure that your life is on the line. Well, you know for sure that a life is on the line. But let's say you're not sure, it's a suffix. Right? So one could argue, in other words, if you want to go by the books, you could say, well, what does the Torah say? The Torah says, v'chaybahem, that you're supposed to live by the mitzvahs. And the rabbis interpreted that to mean, you live by the mitzvahs, you don't die by the mitzvahs. But maybe that's only true if I know I'm going to die. But let's say I don't know that for sure. Let's say it's only a suffix. Let's say it's only a small chance that's going to happen. And more so, let's say you're in a situation where it's more than one suffix. It's a svek svek. There's a suffix within a suffix. So, for example, the case that we just read in this Mishnah is where there was some sort of collapse of a building and Shabbos, and you don't know who's in that building, but you suspect there may be a Jew in that building. So you have the following issues. First of all, it may not be a Jew. There are people in the building, but I'm not sure there's a Jew in the building. That's number one. Number two is the fact that it could be that the person, even if they're in the building, they're not alive anymore. It could be that this from the crush, the person passed away, right? And then you have a situation that let's say you could get even another suffix. Let's say I'm not sure there are people in the building at all. I'm not sure there are people. A building collapsed, I'm not sure there are people. So you have three doubts. There may not be people. Even if there are people, there may not be a Jew. And even if there is a Jew, he may not be alive anymore. Yet, the halacha is that you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos despite all of these things. Now, what's the reason for that? The reason is because the tradition, the Kabbalah that the Chazal had, was that when the Torah says V'chai Bahem, it means that you should live by the mitzvahs, even if it's even in a suffix. Even in a suffix, even in a situation, in other words, that's not what I would have thought. I would have thought, well, if that's the exemption, the exemption is that you live and not die, so you have to know that you're going to live and not die. Therefore, if you have any doubts pertaining to that, the din should be different. But it's not so. Because here there was a specific Kabbalah, a specific Mesorah, that this is the way the mitzvah works, the mitzvah of Chai Bahem, and therefore, even for a svek, 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 even for a chance and a chance and a chance, a person is mechuyev, not just allowed to be mechal Shabbos, but is obligated to be mechal Shabbos in that situation. So this is very important to know. It doesn't matter that you say, well, it's like, you know, God forbid somebody falls into a river or something like that. You say, oh, it's been a while already, but it could be probably, unfortunately, drowned by now. It doesn't matter. As long as there's even it's the slightest chance, as long as there's the slightest chance you're allowed to do it, and the mitzvah of Achai Behem applies. So says, this is what the Mishnah says, and that's the chiddush of that Mishnah. Okay, now we continue here. The Gemara says on the Pei Dalet Amid Beis, here it's on the sheet, page 1. So I made a little arrow, it's about halfway down the page, in the margin, I made a little arrow there. Tana Rabbanan, it's underlined. Tana Rabbanan, Mefachin Bikuach Nefesh B'Shabbos. So the Braisa says that a person is allowed to go ahead and pursue situations of pikuach nefesh. V'hazoriz harezem mishubach. Hazoriz harezem mishubach means that a person who goes quickly to do it is praiseworthy. In other words, this is not the time for asking shilas. If you think that there's a situation going on, then you just do it, and the faster you go, the better. And you don't try to delay it, and you don't try to look for a guy to do it. Right? In other words, in general, it's important to know that there's a basic fundamental question that comes up when we talk about healing people on Shabbos and so forth. So the question is, do we say, or saving a person's life? So the question is, in situations we're allowed to do it, so we have a question, does that mean that you could do it indiscriminately, that Shabbos is hutra etzel pikuach nefesh, which means that the whole prohibition of Shabbos has been removed completely? Or do we say no, that it's dechuya, meaning that the prohibition of Shabbos is still there, but it's justifiable if it's pikuach nefesh? What would be the difference? The difference would be if a person could easily get a non-Jew to do it. Okay, if you could easily get a non-Jew to do it, so then you say, well, if there's no prohibition of Shabbos at all, so then why do I need to get a goy? For me, it's mutter. There's no problem. In other words, if the prohibition of Shabbos was removed in this situation, so then there's no reason to get a goy. On the other hand, if you say that no, it's not just it's removed, just that you could justify pushing off Shabbos, so then we would say that if you had a goy to do it, then so be it. However, that is largely theoretical. Because when it comes to Lamaisa, to Pikuach Nefesh, so the halachas, what it says here in the Mishnah, and the Braisa, and it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that the fact of the matter is that a Jew who sees it should do it, unless you are confident, without any shadow of a doubt, that it will make no difference if a guy does it. But other than that, theoretically, let's say a person on a respirator, and you see that the machine is only going to last for, the battery needs to be recharged or whatever, the machine is only going to last for another hour. And you see it now, I still have an hour to go. So there's some manipulation that I could do that would cause the machine to go further, so it's justifiable because it's Shabbos, it's Pikuach Nefesh. But in this situation, it's no big deal if I had a non-Jew do it because we have an hour anyway and there's a non-Jew standing right next to me. So then you would say, better to get a goy. But when it comes to something where every second makes a difference, then there's no question a Jew could do himself, should not even bother looking for a non-Jew. When they started the Hatzolah, originally in New York, and now Baruch Hashem we have it in many places, including here, so the question came up involving getting Goyim, and Rav Moshe Feinstein at that time, who passed into all the Shilas, said that you just go yourself, and the belief was that a Jew for another Jew would go the extra mile, in every sense of the word, would go faster, and therefore there's not even a question that a person should call if in a place where it would be, where there's a viable Hatzolah available, so you don't start calling Goyim. Just call them and let them deal with it, because of the fact that when it comes to these things, if you think that it makes even the slightest difference for even 1 second, so then the halach is that a Jew should do it. And the Shulchan Aruch says here, V'azor is hareza meshubach, that a person who is who's quick to do it, who is diligent to do it, is praiseworthy. Okay. So this is the basic fundamental concept that we have here in the Gemara. So it says the ains. Going back to the Gemara on page 1, it says the ains sarach little rishus mi bezdin, and a person does not have to take permission from bezdin in order to do this. Okay, meaning you don't have to go ask a rav. If you know this is going on, just do it. You don't have to start calling the rabbi. If you think there's somebody, chas shalom, that happens sometimes, an injury in a house that could be serious, that could be life-threatening, or a person is choking, or any possible situation, then just do it yourself. You don't start calling rabbis. You get in the car, turn it on, and drive to the hospital. Okay, or get that solo to do it, if maybe they're more adept at doing that. Okay, if time is a factor at all, ain't sarach lito rishus mi bezdin. Okay, so it says here, the Braisa continues, Hoketzad, how is this? What would be an example? Ra tinok shenafo liyam, if a person saw that a child has fallen into the river, so pores mitsuda umaleu, so the Braisa says that one could take a large net and toss it into the river to rescue the child, v'hazariz hareza meshubach, and the one who does that as quickly as possible is praiseworthy. The ain sarach lito rishus mi bezdin, you don't have to get permission. The afal gaf the kotsayit kvari, and even though you know that by doing this, I'm also going to catch fish. In other words, if I throw it, which is a Torah violation, right? The person not allowed to do that on Shabbos, not allowed to trap animals or trap fish or whatever it may be. But it makes no difference, because here, once you could do it, you could do it. You say, well, if I do it, oh, there's going to be, so to speak, collateral halachic damage. Right? So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You just do it, finish. That's the basic concept over here. Okay, so this is it's important to be sensitized to this and for a person to be aware of this, because Rechmal Islam, this could happen to anyone at any time. We can have a situation, if a person thinks that it's life-threatening, then you don't ask questions. You don't ask questions. The only time a person would go to ask a question, if you're not sure what the... meaning, if you even think it might be life-threatening, you also don't ask questions. But if it, in a situation what's called a chol she'ein bo sakana, a lot of times on Shabbos situations come up where it's not life-threatening. A person breaks a bone or something like that, so it's not life-threatening. It just has to be, I mean, assuming it's going to be treated properly. That's not a life-threatening thing. So that's where a person would have to ask questions, because for that, really, it can't be Mechal Shabbos. For that, you'd have to get a guy to do. But in that type of situation, a person, at this time, nothing terrible is going to happen if you wait a little bit. So then, in that type of situation, a person would ask. But if there's any doubt at all, then a person does not ask questions and is Mechal Shabbos. Okay, so now, who does this extend to? Who does this extend to? So if you turn over the page here to page 2, okay, so you can leave it open because we're going to go straight from 2 to 3. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch says here in Simen Shin Chav Tes, it's the last line of the top section. It says, Kol Pikuach Nefesh Docha Shabbos, this that we saw in the Gemara is codified in the Shulchan Aruch, that any life-threatening situation, it pushes off Shabbos, Vazaris Hareza Meshubach, and a person who is quick to do it is praiseworthy. And Afiu Nafla Gleika B'chatzer Acheres, even if there was a fire in the next courtyard, the Yoresh Atavar L'chatzer, continue ahead of page 3, the Yorein, we're concerned, Shatavar L'chatzer Zu, you're afraid that fire is going to spread, the Avali De Sakana, and it's going to come to a Sakana here, Mechabin, you're allowed to put it out, Kidei Shalo Tavar, you're allowed to put it out, in order that it should not spread, meaning that all kinds of situations that could come up, so the Halacha is that a person can be Mechal Shabbos. Now, if you look here, let's just see for a minute. The halacha applies not only by a person who is a gadol, but this din applies not only by a person who is over the age of mitzvahs, a boy over 13 or a girl over 12, but obviously this halacha applies even for a child, as we saw that in the Gemara, that it would apply even for a person who was not fully mentally intact, a person who is a shota, makes no difference. Makes no difference whatsoever. If the person is, even a person who, you know, was in some mental institution, whatever it is, makes no difference. Whoever it is, you have to be Mechal Shabbos. Now, what about a person who is not religious? So a person who's not religious, you also have to be Mechal Shabbos. If you turn to page 4 and you look in the Mishnah Berurah here on the four lines from the top, so it says here that Yisroel Baal Averus L'Teyavon, a Jew who violates the Torah, L'Teyavon. L'Teyavon means that he's doing it for his own benefit, his own enjoyment, which is usually the case. In other words, in Halacha, there are two types of people who violate the Torah, two very broad classifications. The most common one is a person who violates the Torah for his own benefit, meaning that it's too hard for me to keep Shabbos, it's too hard for me to eat kosher. So he's not actively rebelling against God. Right? It's not a theological issue, right? Okay, I want to eat this. What can I tell you? I can't control myself. So that's called the Teyavim. That classification of Halacha, generally speaking, we don't treat that person any differently than a person who's observant. And therefore, in 99.9% of the cases, that's the way it is, right? People who don't, today, you also have people who don't even know. You have people who aren't religious because no one ever taught them. So that's certainly true that you would be Mechal Shabbos for them. But even, let's say, a person knows, but they don't go by it, okay? You know, they know about Shabbos and they don't keep it. But the reason why they don't observe Shabbos is because it's not convenient for them. It's too hard. So too hard, that's called a mumar, means a sinner who is l'teyavon. A Baal Averus L'Teyavon, so the Mishnah Berurah says, Kol Zman She'ein Kofer B'Torah, so long as the person does not deny the Torah, Nira D'Mechalon Alav Shabbos K'dei L'Atzilo. Okay, so the The Mishnah Berurah says that you mechal Shabbos to such a person as long as the person is not kofar b'Torah. What exactly means kofar b'Torah is also a good question. How that applies in today's world, because again, a person today who never knew, who was never taught, I don't think would be categorized as a kofar b'Torah. Kofar b'Torah means they know and they, you know, it's lahachis. That's the other category. A mumer, a person of balaver, is lahachis. The person is doing it to make God angry. He's doing it out of spite. He's saying, I don't care what you say. I'm doing it. I'm doing whatever I feel like. So that's not so common. In that type of case, he proceeds to say he would not be mechal Shabbos. But that's generally not assumed to be. And again, on any suffix, you could be mechal Shabbos. So even, let's say, you knew the person who's in danger is not religious. You don't have to start giving them a farher. You don't have to start probing. Yeah. So tell me, you know, the guy's under the rubble. Yeah. So tell me, what do you believe? You don't keep Shabbos. Why not? Right? You don't have to conduct an interview at a time like that, but rather because we've learned that for any suffix, you could be mechal Shabbos. So this is also a suffix. Yeah, it's true. If you knew that the person was a kofar b'Torah, if you knew the person was mumel achas, you wouldn't do it. But you don't know that. So therefore, so that also justifies being mechal Shabbos. Okay, if we turn back here, just going to run through a few of them. Yeah.
So the kimta we had before, which we were afraid that was going to go to a chatzar acheres.
Yes.
So there you had a suffix, but we're assuming that you couldn't run to the other chatzar and ask the people to leave. In other words, that has to be the kimta. Can't just
right.
Be
correct. Okay, that's a good point. In other words, in situations where you could rescue the people by just telling them to leave, there is a fire, so you don't have to go right away with the host to put out the fire. You just tell the people, assuming that you have to make an assessment of the situation, but assuming you can say to them, all right, just go out, and you know nothing terrible will happen for the next half hour. If you stay here, it's going to be a disaster. So leave. So for that, you wouldn't have the right to be Mechal Shabbos. But again, you have to really be careful with these things because of the fact that fires could spread. You know, and it's also today it's a little different. The Rachmanos only deal with fires. So today, many people have houses that are completely detached. Certainly here in Florida, you go in New York, you have, you know, row houses, you have neighborhoods where the street, where every house is double attached. In other words, the house is connected to another house on the right side and another house on the left side. If it's not a situation like that, a fire could burn down the whole block. And that's what used to be in European communities. You hear stories where the whole cities burnt down. Terrible, terrible stories. There's a story that just to go off on a tangent for a second, you know, the Vilna Gaon was very much interested. He was bothered greatly by the Ashkenazic practice of not saying Birchas Kohanim other than on Yontif. According to the Torah, so Birchas Kohanim is supposed to be said every day, and in fact, the Sfaradim do that, and in Eretz Yisrael they do that. Yeah. But the Ashkenazim who live in Chutz La'aretz follow the ruling of the Ramah, that the Ramah said that we don't do it today because of the fact that a person has to be besimcha, tov lev hu yivarech, that a person, in order to give a bracha, has to be in a good frame of mind. And unfortunately, the situation in the Golos was that the Jews very often were not in such a good frame of mind. And even a person, you say Baruch Hashem, but today we don't live with that type of fear. But people are very stressed out about their parnosa and things like that. So therefore, the practice became that the Ashkenazi Jews only will duchen on Yontif, and even on Yontif. No, it's not even Shabbos. Shabbos is not good enough because, as unfortunately we know, sometimes Shabbos is not, even though you're not supposed to think about your business on Shabbos, but it's not always so easy. So a person who's stressed out would be stressed out on Shabbos too. And even on Yontif, they felt that way, except that by Musaf on Yontif, since you're about to go home, and on Yontif there is a mitzvah to have very elaborate meals, more so even than on Shabbos. So therefore, since the person knows he could already smell the potato kugel from the door of the window of the shul, so he's about to go home, so therefore you're allowed to duchen by Musaf. Right? This is what he says. That's what the Ramah said. Only by Musaf on Yontif, and that's it. Not even by Shachris on Yontif. Not even by Shachris on Yontif. It might be, I don't want to start trouble, it might be somewhat questionable of the practice on Simchas Torah that shuls, you know, they don't duchen by Musaf because of the people drink, so a kohen is not allowed to do a davodah after he had a drink. So that's why, by the way, you don't have Birchas Kohanim by Mincha on a regular day because of the fact that in the olden times, what did people drink with their meals? It's not like today that you have all kinds, you have a juice and milk and all kinds of things. And the olden times before refrigeration, the only thing that people had in their house to drink was something that didn't need to be refrigerated. Basically, it was wine and beer. Okay, so therefore, it was very common that people drank alcoholic beverages with their meals. And therefore, the halacha is that we don't say Birchas Kohanim by, even let's say in Eretz Yisrael, where they duchen every day by Shachris, but they don't duchen by Mincha. So you can say, yeah, why not? What's the difference? They have a Chazaras Shachris by Mincha too. So why don't you say it then? So the answer is because of the fact that Mincha is davened after a person ate. Shachris is davened before a person eats. So therefore, after a person ate, there's a concern that he already had some alcoholic beverages, not able to duchen. Okay, so therefore, on Simchas Torah, we don't duchen by Musaf. If people do it by Shachris, it's widely, widely done. I guess it must be okay because it's widely done. But the question is, but according to the Ramah, one could be a stickler and say, wait, but he only said it's mutter by Musaf. Whatever. Okay, so it's widely done. But anyway, I'll call upon him. So what does this have to do with us? Because the Vilna Gaon was very bothered by this practice, and he disagreed strongly with what the Ramah said, and he attempted to reinstate it. And he got together his Talmidim, and he said, okay, on this and this day, we're going to change the practice. We're going to start Birchas Kohanim. And the night before that happened, there was a terrible fire in the city of Vilna, burnt down a good part of the city. And so they couldn't put this plan into effect because everybody was all, very preoccupied. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they tried it again and it happened again.
Wow.
So at that point, the Vilna Gaon said that I see that in heaven they don't like the fact that I'm disagreeing with the Ramah. And that was the Ramah said that. That's an interesting story. Right? In other words, that the Ramah's ruling stands. Right, which is a tremendous thing to take into consideration when we deal with the Shulchan Aruch and the authority that the poskim of the Shulchan Aruch, whether it's the Rabbi Yosef Karo or the Mechaber or the Ramar Moshe Isles, whoever it is, those two people, the standing that they have in halacha is quite remarkable. We don't easily disagree with what they say. Anyway, but when it comes to getting back to returning to our topic, when you're dealing with a fire, you also have to make a very quick assessment of the situation. Can you get it out? How's it going to, technically, if a person knew they can get out the fire without doing anything, so the halacha of the Gemara says you're just supposed to put water around the fire and hope that the fire won't spread, right? But a lot of times today, you have to really know the situation, and it could be very dangerous. It's not such a simple matter. Okay, moving on here to Sif Beis. Okay, on page 3, Sif Beis, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Ein holchin b'pikuach nefesh achar harov." Okay, another Torah law that we sort of bypass when it comes to saving lives is that, generally speaking, when we're dealing with a situation of doubt, when you're dealing with a suffix. So one of the fundamental rules in the Torah when dealing with a suffix is that we go by the majority, that we follow the ruling, that we try to determine what the majority is. In other words, for example, if a person if a person finds a piece of meat, the classical case in Gemara, a person finds a piece of meat in the street, and in that town, most of the meat is kosher, so technically a person would be allowed to take home that meat and eat it. Okay, because of the fact that most is kosher, this is only theoretical in our times because the rabbis got involved and said you can't eat because they made a decree against Basar Shana Salman Ayin and against meat that went without being supervised. But whatever the case may be, that's the basic principle. The basic principle is that when you're dealing with doubts, you follow the majority. Now, if that's true, so getting back to the collapsed building scenario, okay, so you have a collapsed building, and you say, is there a Jew in that building or not? So you say, well, the majority of people that are around are non-Jews. So therefore, by the standing rule of the Torah that you're supposed to go by the majority, you should say, well, I can't be Mechal Shabbos because of the fact that the majority is only a minority chance that there's a Jew there. Nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch says that when it comes to this area of halacha, we do not go by the majority. And therefore, what would be if you had a courtyard, a little neighborhood where you had 9 goyim and 1 Jew, okay, and one of them went into a different chatzer, you couldn't see who it was. You could see from the distance that one person from that group went into a building, and then, boom, that building collapsed. So you say, well, I don't know who it was. And the majority of the people, the odds are very high that it was not the Jew. Nevertheless, the halacha is that we don't go by rov when it comes to pikuach nefesh. There is some complication here in the case, the Shulchan Aruch proceeds to say, but just to make life simple, we'll go that that's the standing rule, that we do not find. In other words, again, the same way with other sfeikas, we say that even if it's a doubt, even if it's a sfeik sfeik sfeika, whatever it is, we do with Michal Shabbos, so too, we do not follow the rov.
Is that the okay. That we don't save a non-Jew?
What's that? Okay, so as far as saving a non-Jew is a question that technically, according to the law of the Gemara, the violation, the license to violate Shabbos was only given for Jews. The Kedushas Yisrael is such that for a Jew you could say you could violate Shabbos. Now you'll say, what about this? So what does that mean? If it happens today, I just walk away if a non-Jew is there. So there is in halacha a concept what's called eva. Eva means that there's a essentially rabbinic law, but it's very broad, that a lot of times a person has to do things because, if, even for a non-Jew, because if I don't do this, the repercussions could be very bad. The repercussions could be very bad. If people find out that walked away from a non-Jew, so based on that, so this is a shear in its own right, when it applies, when it doesn't apply. But based on that, there is, Moshe Feinstein held that there is that a person could be Michal Shabbos. This happens all the time with Hatzolah, that they get a call and the person turns on, they get a call on Shabbos, and lo and behold, the person isn't Jewish. Right? They see there's a cross around his neck or whatever it was. Somebody called Hatzolah. This is not such a simple matter, because this happens a lot. And in New York especially, this has been a very big issue, because it was raised, all kinds of lawsuits, discrimination, all kinds of things. So it's a very, very delicate, issue, but the standing din in the Gemara, and that's what the Shulchan Aruch is going by, is that the permission to desecrate Shabbos is only for a Jew. All things being equal, is that Lamaisa today? So maybe one day we'll talk about that. That's the shear in itself, that how it pertains to a guy. Yeah?
Well, it says here of
yes.
Right, which is idolism.
Right, but that's just a generic term. That's a generic term that was used to, even though today nobody, it doesn't mean idol worshippers, it means the word star worshippers. Right, of the Kachavim, right. But the fact of the matter is that that's a generic term that the Gemara used referring to Goyim, and it applies pretty much to everybody. You should just know, I don't know if it applies to this, but aside from the Mishnah Berurah, the other source of contemporary halacha, which is widely, worldwide respected, is a book called Aruch HaShulchan, which was written by a very great rabbi at the end of the 19th century. And that also is very widely accepted, and people follow his rulings. And the person who wrote this, Rabbi Yechiel Michel Epstein, was his name, was a rav in the city of Novardik in Russia. And it was, and in Russia, the printing of Svarim was under heavy censorship. So heavy censorship. The government used to look through any Jewish book that was published to see if there were any inflammatory statements made against non-Jews. And therefore, and if you look in his sefer, you find all the time that when disclaimers, that whenever you have laws like this, he'll sometimes throw in a line that says, well, but this doesn't apply anymore, because today all the goyim are wonderful, and especially the Tsar is the most wonderful person we've ever seen, right, and so forth. But anyone who's familiar with that knows that that was just written under censorship, and it doesn't mean anything. So this is a reality. You look in the sefer, and in all four sections of Shulchan Aruch, this comes up. And here also, if you look in Shin Chavtes, you'll see that he doesn't refer to them as Goyim, he refers to them as a person who's like a tyrant or something like that. He doesn't, because again, this was written, by the way, just as an aside, it's something that people don't know, but in when you say Aleinu, Aleinu Shabbat, so the prayer Aleinu Shabbat was composed by Yeshua ben Nun. Right, when the city of Yericho was destroyed, so Yeshua, Moshe, Ben's Talmud, Yeshua composed that prayer. It's one of the oldest tefillos that we have. And it says that in the Aleinu, there is a line that was censored out, which is, She'eh mishtachavim lehevel v'rit, That we say that the non, we thank Hashem that you didn't make us like the non-Jews, because they bow down to to emptiness and nothing, and they pray to a God who cannot help them. So that phrase was, which was in the original when Yeshua ben Nun composed it, that phrase was censored out by the Goyim, and it's only in recent times that it got reprinted in the Siddurim. I believe in the Oscars and a lot of Siddurim, they still put it in parentheses or in brackets because of the fact that a lot of people did not used to say it. So then the question came up already, the Masorah is not to say it, so should we go back to the original way? Fine. But what I want to point out is that if you ever noticed, in shuls, they sing Oleinu out loud, right? Oleinu Shabeach. And the original tune, Oleinu Shabeach, runs out. It doesn't cover the whole Oleinu Shabeach. It doesn't even cover the whole first paragraph, right? Finished. End of the song. He didn't finish. A new tune was added for Shehu Nota Shemayim Yosef Aretz, but that's not the original. The original ends with Neimelach Malchem Lachem Gadosh Baruch Hu. So you might wonder, why is that? Why is that? I mean, once you're putting the tune, why don't you cover the whole, at least cover the whole paragraph, even if you don't want to get the second paragraph. So the answer is, this is true, the answer is because in Russia, the government used to send spies. They used to send people, government officers, to stand in the shul and make sure that the Jews didn't say that line. Shehei Mishtachlim Lehevel V'Rik. They were so adamantly opposed to it that they wanted to make sure they wouldn't say it, so they insisted that the Jews sing it. The practice to sing Aleinu and Shul started from Goyim. Okay, because they said, we want you to sing it so that we're going to make sure that you don't say that controversial line. And that's why the tune ends right after that line. Then there's one more sentence. Finished. Right? Why? Because that's at that point, okay, they didn't say it, finished. This is true. So it's an interesting thing. It's a time-honored custom. Everyone sings it, and today already they made additional tunes. But in a lot of shuls, they still stop there, right? So if you ever wondered about that, why do they stop there? That's the answer. The answer is because it was said. We don't appreciate Baruch Hashem the opportunity we have to live in this country with the freedom of religion. You can do what you want. So therefore, nobody can stop you. It didn't used to be that way. It didn't used to be that way at all. So therefore, you have a lot of these situations that came up that, we have to have an appreciation for what we have. It's not a small matter. Okay, anyway, moving right along here. So now, if one goes to the very important halacha we have in Sif Dalet, which is on page 3, the last line on the top section, and that is the following, that it says, Afilu mitza'uhu merutzatz, that even if, let's say the classical case that the Shulchan Aruch works with is where the building collapsed and you're removing the debris. That's of course it applies in any situation, but that's the case that the Chazal were dealing with, because that case highlights the situation where you could even have a doubt or several doubts. That's why they picked that case. Okay, so now what happens if they start to uncover the debris and they see, sure enough, there he is, but he's crushed. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says, She'eno yochal lichyos elo lefisha. You could see right away that he's not going to make it. He's going to live, but only for a very short period of time. In other words, it's the damage that took place from this collapsed building is such that there's no way that even if we rescue him, he's going to get back to where he was. So we turn here to page 4. The halacha is mefakhin, that even so, you can violate Shabbos. Meaning you can violate Shabbos even if it means just simply to prolong a person's life. Even if you know for a fact, this is a common thing that would happen nowadays where a person who's terminally ill or whatever it is, in a situation where you know that they're not, there's no way they're going to get better. There's no way. But barring a miracle, there's no way they're going to get better. But the question is, so if I help them now, so I'll help them, then they'll be able to live another few days. Or maybe even another few minutes. So the halacha is that even in that case also you could do it. That even for Chai Yeshua, we violate Shabbos. He says, then you can see, the Shulchan Aruch says, you check to see if the person is breathing. But that's the standing halacha that even for chayisha a person can violate Shabbos.
What about risking your own life?
I'll get to that right now. So now comes the law, and not in 2 minutes we'll get there. Okay, just skipping along so we could finish. If you go here and there, we're on page 4 now. Okay, in Sifa, Kusim Shetzaru Alayoros Yisrael. What happens if a Jewish city comes under siege from non-Jews, or a Jewish town? This unfortunately used to happen. So the question is, what do the people in the siege want? Are they coming for murder, or are they coming for money? In other words, if they say sometimes, okay, if you give us X amount of money, we'll leave you alone. So the halacha is that the Shulchan Aruch says if they're coming for money, it cannot be Mechal Shabbos. Money is not a factor when it comes to Shabbos. Only Pikuach Nefesh is. So therefore, by Nisa Daraisa, right? It's true not just by Shabbos, by everything. In other words, for money, you can't violate a Torah law. Okay, so therefore, if you know that these people are coming just for money, you have to pay them the money. Okay, however, if you know that they're coming to kill, or even if you suspect that they're coming to kill, so then the halacha is you can violate Shabbos too. Okay, because even if it's only a suffix, as we've said. Okay, there is an opinion that says that nowadays, in Siv Zion, he says that nowadays, that it's always assumed that they're coming to kill, but that's a question, whether that's true, fine. Okay, the question was asked a moment ago. Do you have to put your own life in jeopardy in order to save someone else's life? So, the Shulchan Aruch says here in Sif Ches, which is 2, 4, 6, 8 lines from the top, Sif Ches, Haroes Sfina Sheesh Ba Yisroel Hametureffes Bayam. If a person sees that there is a boat that is sinking, okay, so the halacha if Chay Nar Shotev, there's a big tidal wave that's going to drown somebody, or Yochid Hanirdof Mipnei Anos, or somebody, a Jew who's being chased by someone else who's looking to kill him. So mitzvah ko adam uchal aleim Shabbos kidei latzilam. So it's a mitzvah to be mechal Shabbos to save that person. So if you look on the bottom, the Mishnah Berurah here on Yutes, which is on the bottom part of the page, 5 lines from the end, he says that kidei latzilam Yutes. He says umikom makom im yesh sakana lahamatzil. Says the Mishnah Berurah that if the rescuer is going to be put in jeopardy, so then the halacha is eino mechuyev. Then he does not have to do it. Why doesn't he have to do it? Because of the fact that mishum dechayev kodem lechayev chavero. Because a person, my own life comes before somebody else's life. Right? That's a different pasuk in the Torah that says in the Torah v'chei achicha imach, that your fellow Jew should live together with you. From which the rabbis had the tradition that what that means is, what the Torah is trying to convey, is that your life takes precedence over somebody else's life. So therefore, the Mishnah Berurah says, "Vafilu suffix sakona nami odif sveko didei mivadai dechavero." He says, not only that, but even if you think that there's a chance that you could be in a sakana, for that also you don't have to save somebody, even if that person is definitely going to die. Now, as for example, God forbid it should never happen, but a building is on fire, and you want to run in and save somebody, but you're not sure, if you don't save them, it's going to be killed. But if you run into the building, there's a chance, you don't know, it could be you'll get out safely, but maybe not. So technically, the halacha is that in that situation, you're not mechuyev to put yourself, even for a suffix sakon of your own life, for somebody else. Okay. However, the Mishnah Berurah says that ulam tzarech lishkol atzvarim heitev, that a person has to make a very careful assessment, because it's very easy in this situation to rationalize and say, I don't want to take a chance. You have to know, are you taking a chance? Maybe you're not taking a chance. In other words, you have to really make a good assessment here before you just dismiss the situation and say, I don't have to put myself in danger. Are you putting yourself in danger? Maybe you're not. This also, just for the record, this also relevant in situations where you have, let's say, it's a different discussion, but let's say you have today, you know, bone marrow transplants and things like that, and a person requested blood, let's say even a blood donation, you're requested to donate blood, okay? So a person, if you can help another person, you have a chiyuv to do it. Yeah, a person has a chiyuv to do it. You can't just say, well, it's not convenient for me. or it may be under the procedure may be uncomfortable. That's not a justification. What is a justification is if it's a suffix sakana. In other words, if you think that by doing this that it may put I may put myself in jeopardy, even if it's only a chance, to that a person doesn't have to do it. But short of that, another a person, this is not, you know, this is not a small matter. And I'm not saying halacha l'maaseh, a person could ask a rav if this comes up. But I'm just putting it out there that we're dealing here with the sanctity of life and the importance of life. And therefore, you know, if I have the ability to save somebody, you can't just walk away from that. You know, that we weren't once, there was a discussion, there's an Isra in the Torah, Samad al Damreyecha, you can't stand by and watch a person be killed, which doesn't just mean if you're physically standing there, but it means if you could do something about it. If I can do something about it, I have to do something about it. So unless it's going to be a sakana or a suffix sakana, then I don't have to. But short of that, a person has to do it. Very important concept, because this in the modern world comes up a lot. Comes up a lot of things. You have to really make an honest evaluation. Is it just that I don't want, you know, there's an old Yiddish expression that zognit as mekenit, zognar as mevilnit, which means a lot of times a person says, this can't be done. I can't do this. So it's an old Yiddish expression, a bit cynical, that says, don't say it can't. You can't do it. Rather say you don't want to do it. In other words, a lot of times, a person who doesn't want to do something says, I can't do it. Well, when it comes to these things, that's a very important distinction. Is it that you don't want to do it, or that you can't do it? If you can do it, then it's not so simple. You don't be kuch nefesh. You can save a person's life. You can save a person's life, not a small thing. Yes?
What about like in a war situation, there's a grenade and somebody jumps on the grenade, so his buddies are...
So that's a question. So, that's a discussion in its own right. When it comes to... In the military, there's certain things called hilchos melchama. Okay, there's a separate set of laws that apply to war. You can't. In other words, if everyone went with this photocopy into war, nobody would go anywhere, right? They'd all be sitting inside the bunker, and the sergeant or the captain would say, "Okay, let's go." And you say, "Are you kidding? I'm putting myself in a sakana, even a suffix sakana, right? You start with all the lumpus, you know, the guy will take out his gemara." Okay,
that's why they don't go into the army.
No. That's not. The fact of the matter is, it's a different set of rules. In a war, there's certain things that a person has to do that you do, and it's different rules. But we're talking here, obviously, in a normal situation, and this is the din. See, a person does not have to put himself into such a sakana. Now, one more thing, we'll be finished. Siftes, very important halacha. Kol hayotzim lahatzil, anybody who goes out to save someone's life, chozrin b'chlei zainam l'mkoman, is allowed to return back with their weapons. In other words, we're talking here, let's say, about a person going to take a gun. Either someone's in danger, so I'm going to take a gun on Shabbos. Now, let's say that there's no Erev. There's no Erev in the town. And you heard that there's a Jew in danger two blocks away. But there's no Erev. So the halacha is, so what? There's no Erev. But you could take, if you could do something about it, so you go out to be Mechal Shabbos. So you take your gun and you go there. Now, let's say the situation, you got there, and the situation resolved. So now the question is, can you go back? Can you go back home? Now, if it's two blocks away, then you can easily walk. But let's say the place that you went to, you drove, right? You heard that there's somebody 2 miles from here, or 5 miles from here, who's in danger, and you took your gun, and you drove there, and now, Baruch Hashem, the situation was resolved. Okay? So now, can you go back home? So the Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to go back home. Now, this is questionable, because you'll say, why should that be? There's no danger anymore. In other words, I drove to this place. This is a common question when it comes to Hatzolah, right? That happens every single time on Shabbos where you drive to the place, you take the person to the hospital. Okay, Baruch Hashem, you got the person to the hospital and they're being cared for. And now the question is, but the hospital is 20 miles from where I live, so can I go home? Or am I stuck here? Am I stuck here till after Shabbos? Right, and 20 miles, a long walk. So, do I have to stay? So the Shulchan Aruch says that this is based on a ruling in the Gemara that there were certain situations which is called that hitiru sofo mishum tchiloso, that in certain situations the rabbis allowed you to come back because they were concerned that if you don't let the guy come back, the next time he's not going to go in the first place. right? So then the next time he gets called on Shabbat, I'm not going to do that. I'll be stuck there forever. Right? It's Friday night on a 2 day, or the first night of Yontif, on a 2 day Yontif, I'm going to be stuck there. Right? I'll be stuck in the hospital. So therefore, that law is, generally speaking, that a person that in that case allowed to come back. There is a dispute in the poskim whether this applies, just to be honest, whether this applies to a Torah violation or just to a rabbinic violation, because this dispensation was made by the Rabbanan, and this is a big dispute. This is a big argument. So Moshe Feinstein, who passed in the Shailos Vatzola, held it applied even by Anissa Daraisa, and therefore he said it's mutter 100% for the person in the Hatzola, or a doctor, or whatever, to come back home. Now, obviously, it would definitely be mutter to come back home if you thought that they may need you again. In other words, if they may need you again, so then of course I have to go home because I can't stay here. Let's say a doctor. I have to go home because maybe someone else can need a doctor. If I'm the only, let's say I'm the only doctor in town. So if I don't go home, they're going to be stuck without a doctor. So that is the suffix pikuach nefesh. So that there's no question, right? The question would be that let's say Hatzolah situation. So I don't know how it is here, but there's in New York, you have hundreds and hundreds of members in Hatzolah. And, you know, you see, so two fellas go and they take someone to the hospital. And, they went from Brooklyn to Manhattan. Okay, they brought him to one of the hospitals in Manhattan. That question is to go back home. So you can't justify that, well, they need me. What do you mean they need you? There are plenty of other people there. They don't really need you. But nevertheless, so Rav Moshe Feinstein held that it was mutter to do. This was the hotly disputed. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach did not agree with the ruling, but they say over, I heard this from a reliable source in Eretz Yisrael, that when Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach wanted to publish his opinion, which was stricter than Rav Moshe Feinstein's opinion, that he realized the ramifications of that would be that people might not listen to Rav Moshe Feinstein anymore. So he called him and asked him if he had permission to do so. He said, I happen not to agree with you, but he knew that Rav Moshe Feinstein was the king, and he acknowledged that. But he said, but I also have an opinion. My opinion does not agree with yours. Is it okay if I publish it? And only after Rav Moshe told him that he could do it, did he do so. But the fact of the matter is that the standing ruling is, it's accepted, like what Rav Moshe said, that a person could come back even though it violates Torah laws, a person drive a car, violation of Torah laws by doing so. Nevertheless, even though this concept of Shalot HaEmach Shilo Lossad Lobo, that we don't want to put a stumbling block for the future, is only really a rabbinic concept, but he had proofs that it would apply even to a Torah violation. Anyway, there you have it. So we have the basic ideas. Hopefully, we should never know from this. Everyone should live and be well, shouldn't be tzaris. But in a case where these things come up, it's just important to know. It's very important to know what to do and how to respond, and hopefully we have now a little bit more clarity.